Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So we were requesting to do the funeral chanting again. Jeannie's stepmother passing away. The marking of another death. Seems to be a bit of it going around these days. I think it's important that we these occasions. Really bring it inwards and reflect and contemplate, using it as a object of investigation, a meditation subject, which the Buddha recommended on many, many occasions. Saying that the contemplation of the maranasati, contemplation of death, encourages the mind to incline to the deathless and culminates in the deathless, so that willingness to investigate, willingness to contemplate, willingness to recognize the truth of that condition of death being an intrinsic part of our life, that when we use it well, use it skillfully, it brings a sense of urgency, a sense of dispassion, a sense of clarity, so that to be willing to bring it to mind, to lift it up into the heart, and to use that. I think generally within the human realm, then we tend to shy away from it. And I think in a modern culture, modern Western culture, then there's even more of a unfamiliarity with that contemplation of death, or a comfort looking at that as ordinary, something ordinary. So particularly as practitioners, as meditators, I think it's really essential for us to prod the mind to be to bring it up, to reflect on it, to investigate it, and to be comfortable with it. So that it's It's not seen as something out of the ordinary. It's not glossed over, or it's not kind of held in a way of wishful thinking or fear. Because that's it's not something that is wants to be accepted. There's a story I heard of these three friends had they were in a very bad car accident, and they died. The three of them died in this car accident, and they were they were all good people, so they went to kind of probably a heavenly realm, and met by a celestial facilitator for the orientation session, and the facilitator says, asking them, explaining to them what's happened, and getting them to contemplate or reflect. What would you want to hear people say at your funeral, with your friends and relatives gathered around your casket, and the first person said, "Well, I'd like to hear it said that I was an excellent doctor. I was a good family man." The second person said, "Well, I'd like to hear them say that as a teacher, that I made a big difference in children's lives." And the third person said, "I'd like to hear someone say, 'Look, he's moving.'" Which is kind of even faced with the kind of the there it is in your face. It's the inevitable has happened, and one still doesn't want to accept it. And that's so much of our life is like that, and particularly when it comes to death. So that the Buddha is encouraging us not to wait until we die and then deal with it then, but to contemplate, to reflect, to bring it to mind, so that we can neither resist or be confused by that by that reality. So to take that on, and that's that's not a morbid contemplation. But it's especially from the Buddhist perspective, that's really it's very compassionate, one, for him to encourage that, but it's also if we really exercise that, it would be a compassionate act toward ourselves, and to, because the Buddha, there's many discourses where the Buddha speaks about the, you know, that we have we have spent such a long time being in this round of rebirths and this cycle of birth and death, that we it's worth the effort to, you say it behooves us to really contemplate, and there's so many different images that the Buddha gives of just like the, you know, we have we've shed so many tears in this round of birth and death, from the passing away, and the grief that we've experienced, of separation from the loved, the separation from our relatives and friends and those who we are close to and dear to, that there would be, from all the tears we've shed in this round of rebirth, it would be enough to fill the four oceans, so that it's not a small thing, and it's important to be taking that on and bringing it to light, to create a sense of urgency, a sense of dispassion, a willingness to put forth the effort in our practice and training, to not be heedless. As there is a purpose to this practice, and that's to be able to relinquish and let go of the attachments and desires that we have, the assumptions and the proliferations, and if we can't put it down, we keep doing it over and over again. In the early days of Abhayagiri, there was a it was when the monastery behind us, the Lumpa Thun Monastery, was being established as a group of Thai people who had purchased the land to invite Lumpa Thun over for teachings and for them to have places to do retreat and to practice. And it was a substantial group of them who'd been practicing, following Lumpa Thun's teachings and his meditation. And during the days of setting it up, then there was a group of them, just a carload of them, three or four of them, going back down. They'd been up here, going back down the city, and they're driving along just south of Hopland, and along that before Cloverdale, where it winds along the Russian River, and that was before the highway was widened, so it was just two lanes in both directions, so that it wasn't a very wide road at that in those days, and a vehicle pulled out in front of the Thai man was driving, and there was two Thai women, I think, with them, and pulled out quite suddenly in front, and the driver was saying after, he thought, well, I guess, you know, he didn't really quite get it for a second, to realize, oh, he doesn't see us. And it was just coming straight on. And then he realized, and he said, it was only like a second or two before there was going to be a head-on collision, and of course time slowed down, and the thought came to him, oh, this is what we practice for. And he said the only thing that he did was just let go of the wheel, and he said, I have to drop everything now. And it was a head-on collision, and I think the driver of the other vehicle was killed, and the two people in the front were okay, but the person in the back, Michi Yo, was very badly injured, and is still. She's alive today, but she has a lot of chronic pain, a lot of pain, back injuries and different injuries. But it was, you know, interesting that was his thought, was that recognition. This is what we practice. This is why I've been doing this. This is what it's for. And which is actually similar to, say, what his Holiness the Dalai Lama was asked, you know, what is it? Why do you practice? What do you bring to? What's the purpose of this Buddhist practice? It's practicing to die. And it's because that's really it's as simple as that. So this contemplation of Maranasati, contemplation of of death, it's not a an academic contemplation. It's not a philosophical speculation. This is a reality that we have to be willing to reflect on, to investigate, in order to really separate out what is it that's useful, what's beneficial, what is worthwhile, what is to be developed and cultivated, what is to be relinquished and let go of. And And as long as we're not really clear on that, if we keep hanging on to worries and fears and proliferations and moods and memories, then we can expect to keep ourselves occupied for quite a few rounds of samsara. But to reflect on that reality of death, and again, not just to bring up more fear or to have an indifference, but to bring up a wholesome sense of dispassion and relinquishment, so that we're really willing to relinquish the different obsessions and unskillful inclinations that the mind has accumulated. And that and it's very powerful when one does it. When we're sitting meditation, taking that contemplation of death, and just taking it as an exercise, and say, how much. I can't guarantee that I'm going to actually live to the end of this meditation session. Now, that being the case, what's worth hanging on to? What can't I let go of? What is important to me right now? And just focusing on relinquishment and letting go, and then recognizing, where does the mind incline to? What does the mind crank out? And how can I let that go? How can I put that down? How can I resolve that? How can I be at peace with whatever is pushing on the mind, or what is it pulling me out? So that contemplation to really, really clarify the conditioning influences of the mind, and what tools can one use to relinquish? So the Buddha's encouragement to us to contemplate death, contemplate the nature of the body, we have attachments to our body, our perception of who we are as a physical being, and so much of it is around that sense of life, strength, energy, a kind of this is our vehicle for accomplishing things. But you know, contemplating the just the nature of the body, you know, once that last breath comes, you know, and it doesn't matter whether we're young or old, or whether we've been healthy or we're really decrepit, the body just starts to break down immediately. It has been breaking down all the time. It's just been able to keep up with the rate of breaking down. I heard that after death, the first, because all your cells are in a process of regeneration, dissolution. The pancreas is the first organ to basically liquefy very quickly after death, within a couple of days, because there's nothing to hold it together, so it just continues to break down and basically liquefies, and which is what happens to the rest of the internal organs. And basically, we liquefy from the inside out, which is not how we sort of view our cherished ideal of what our physical being is, but it's what it is. It's no the four elements come together, held in a somewhat a state of stasis and holding together, but then, yeah, with the last breath, then it starts to break down completely. And of course, the mind is breaking down all the time, and our moods and thoughts and proliferation sort of bouncing here and there. I think, of course, that's why we meditate, and we develop a consistency in trying to sustain mindfulness and awareness and an ability to exercise discernment, because it's not what the normal human mind actually does. When the mind has not been trained, it's not very reliable, and all of us here have been meditating and practicing for a long time, it's sobering and sometimes even disheartening to say, "Gads, what is with this mind? Why can't it settle? Why can't it relinquish? Why can't it just be quiet?" And sometimes it's on a certain level, it's just, Well, that's what minds do. They sort of they think and feel and conjecture. But it's being able to see it so clearly that one doesn't identify with it. In the same way that one doesn't identify with the body as being me, one needs to be able to see that, yeah, this mind, these moods, these thoughts, these feelings, it's not as if it's somebody else, but it's not, this is not a basis for an assumption of I or me or mine. These are qualities and phenomena in nature that we have to see and understand and not bind ourselves to them. So this contemplation of death is so important for helping to loosen that grip of how we bind ourselves to these natural phenomena of the body and mind. So that picking up that theme of the, and yes, I am of the nature to die. I have not gone beyond dying. And this is something that the Buddha wants us to be contemplating on a consistent, regular basis. And to be able to internalize that, to draw it in. And again, that sense of being comfortable with that. There's a story that I read one time of in China, in Chinese story, and culturally in China they're speaking about death and even, you know, considering contemplating death at all is extremely anathema, and it's very bad form to even mention, talk about death at all. And it's considered inauspicious, inappropriate, bad news. And but anyway, there's a one of the things that in, I don't know if it's the case now, certainly in ancient China, somebody who was a great teacher, they were one of the skills or arts that they would was very highly valued would be to these extemporaneous verses that would be both thought up, but then written out in beautiful calligraphy, and that was, you know, very. If one were seeking a blessing and seeking something auspicious for one's life, one would go to a great teacher and have them compose a verse which would be a great blessing for your life. And there was a very wealthy person, powerful within the society at that time, who heard that this teacher was extremely good, highly respected, and he traveled for a great distance over many difficulties in order to pay respects and to meet and then to receive this blessing. I've arrived at the monastery and paid respects and told the teacher his intention and purpose and also how clarified of what his position was in society and what his kind of background was. And the teacher sat and was quiet, meditated for a bit, composed himself, and then took out his brushes and calligraphy and did these this little kind of verse with the Chinese characters. And then he finished it, presented it to the person, and then the person just kind of screamed, fell over backwards and fainted. And then when he finally came to, he was absolutely livid and angry and upset, and said, "How dare you curse me like this?" And what the teacher had written was, "Parents die, children die, grandchildren die, and he was incredibly upset at how insensitive and awful this person is." And then the teacher waited for him to vent and then started saying, "Well, actually, as human beings, this is actually as good as it gets. If you're a parent and then your children or your grandchildren died before you, that's a source of great sorrow and great pain. And there's no way that anybody has ever not died. So to be able to come into this life and to go through it without experiencing the loss of one's children or grandchildren or that's as good as it gets." And it's a really, really interesting contemplation. It's true. There hasn't been, even the Buddha passed away. And I think if anybody could not pass away, then that would be the Buddha. But that was how often did the Buddha admonish us to reflect on the ordinariness and the inevitability of death, and the necessity of acknowledging and accepting that is the nature of our life. But it's when we're able to reflect and investigate with wisdom and discernment that we can start to relinquish and settle any of our fears, our unfulfilled attachments and desires. It's not that we're going to get what we want, but we can relinquish those attachments and desires. We can establish ourselves in knowledge and understanding of the true nature of things. And by doing that, we're able to live with compassion and a real empathy towards other beings, living in a way that's really for the, because that's so often the Buddha said this practice is for the for one's own benefit and for the benefit of others, for one's own well-being and the well-being of others. And to be able to, it's not separate. And by being able to release around our own fears and our own desires, obsessions, then it's a great blessing for ourselves, but it's a blessing for our presence for others. So being able to really directly encourage the mind to contemplate, to investigate, to hold that that contemplation, so that we're not just skirting around it or running away from it or distracting ourselves from it. Because as we do that, that's kind of our default option, is just to keep ourselves distracted in some way, shape, or form. It's the distractions are, whether we distract ourselves with, whichever mental defilement we're most comfortable with or most familiar with, and sort of distract ourselves with greed in different ways, desire-based distractions, or the distractions of ill will, and sort of irritation, aversion, negativity. It's just a way of keeping ourselves distracted, keeping ourselves distracted with delusion in the sense of worry, fear, doubt, wavering. But those they're all distractions. So that learning how to resolve those distractions through the contemplation of truth, contemplation of Dhamma, and that the investigation and recollection of death is a very powerful tool, and we need the tools. We need to be skilled in the use of these tools. So in our meditation, to be willing to use the tools that have worked for millennia. So I offer that for reflection this evening.